Brutus the Trojan as the Homeric hero Perutus by L.A. Waddell. Homer, I find, appears to mention repeatedly King Brutus the Trojan as the famous hero Perutus, both in his Iliad and Odyssey, as one of the most famous of ancient classic heroes, as the conqueror of Aboriginal tribes, the slayer of the Calydon boar, and as the associate of the Phoenician Hercules in the cruise of the Argo for the Golden Fleece. And Hercules, according to all tradition, visited Gades beyond the Pillars of Hercules, which Phoenician port was, as we have seen, the halfway house of Brutus on his voyage to Britain. Though as Perutus lived several centuries before the epoch of Homer, that immortal bard, with his usual poetic license and anachronism, in gathering together into one romance all the galaxy of heroic names floating in Trojan tradition in his day, makes Perutus an Achaean hero, a generation before the Trojan War, for he could not, from Brutus's Trojan ancestry, as a descendant of Innes, bring him in at all otherwise. The resemblance between Homer's Perutus and Brutus the Trojan is so striking, not merely in the form of the name, but also in the numerous details of their respective traditional history and adventures, that it establishes the great probability that they were one and the same personage. First, as to their ancestry, we have seen that Brutus, the Briotus of the Irish Scott texts, was, according to the ancient British chronicles, the grandson of Innes' son, Ascanios, and resided for a time in Epirus of Greece, where he married the king's daughter. Now Homer describes his hero, Perutus, who also was for a time in Epirus, and where he also went marriage hunting, as the son of the wife of Ixia. Here, Ixion seems presumably a dialectic or purposely obscured form of Ascanios, the Isicon of the Scottish and Irish Scot versions of the Brutus tradition, and son is frequently used in the general sense of descendant. So great was the fame of the warrior Perutus, the Perutus of the Roman writers, that he is figured alongside his companion Corinus, Canius the Corineus of the British chronicles, on the shield of Hercules, and Homer makes Nestor say in chiding Achilles, quote, "Yea, I never beheld such warriors, nor shall behold, as were Perutus and Coronus. Mightiest of growth were they of all men upon the earth. Even the wild tribes of the mountain caves, and destroyed them utterly." Close quote. The picture of the hero Perutus was frequently painted in the interior of temples in ancient Greece. He is described as a slayer of the Calydon boar, which may preserve a memory of his conquest of Caledonia, especially as Brutus is reported in the chronicles to have conquered North Britain as far as the Forth. But his greatest achievement was his conquest of the wild, marauding aborigines of Pelion Mountain, a name which may possibly, as we shall see, be an adaptation of the name of the rock-shotten Isle of Albion, to fit a well-known classic Greek name, or it may connote the older name for Alban of Felinis, though the British texts record that Brutus did actually occupy the Pindos region before coming to Alban. The Homeric record reads, quote, "On that day, when Perutus took vengeance on the shaggy wild folk and thrust them forth from Pelion and drove them to the Echeces, of Pindus. It seems remarkable here that the Eight Hikis tribe of the Pindus mountain range is suggestive of the shortened Ict and Ictis title of the Picts of the numerous Venti places in Britain and the Pentland Hills in series with Pindus. In his campaign against the shaggy wild folk, Perutus is assisted by Coronus Canius, just as Brutus was assisted by Corinius, and similarly, Homer records that the sons of Perutus and Coronus Canius, who had jointly a fleet of 40 black ships, ruled conjointly over the same wild people. So did the sons of Brutus and Corinius rule conjointly in Britain. Moreover, Perutus engaged in battle with the king of Epirus in northwestern Greece and was confined on the banks of the Acheron River there, just as Brutus, in the British account of his fighting against the king of Greece, had a battle on the bank of the Acheloo River there, a name which is evidently intended for Acheron. Further, it is stated that Perutus visited Epirus marriage hunting, and was married on the borders of Epirus, just as Brutus married the daughter of the Grecian king of Epirus. In one of the frescoes in the ancient Greek temples, Perutus is painted seated on the bank of the Acheron, and next to him are the beauteous daughters of King Pandureos, one of whom was the famous Clytie, who appears to have been the wife of Brutus. And according to the British Chronicles, Brutus married the daughter of King Pandrasius. Still further, Epirus and the adjoining South Macedonia were in part inhabited by a tribe called Parthenae, which was presumably the remains of the ruling tribe of Barats of Brutus, or the memory of his Barat or Baritan tribe having formerly dwelt there. And in the Parthenae region is the town Barat on the Devoli River. And on the northern or Macedonia frontier of Epirus was the town of Phonice on the Xanthus River, thus attesting the ancient presence of Phoenicians there. For the classic Greek writers repeatedly state that ancient Greece derived its letters and most of higher civilization from the Phoenicians. And lastly, and significantly, Perutus suddenly disappears from ancient classic Greek history, and I can find no reference anywhere to his death or tomb in Greece, nor of that of his kinsman, Coronus Canius. The last heard of him, presumably, is that, according to the later myth of the quest for the Golden Fleece, he sailed away on the good ship Argos with Hercules and Jason and their company of heroes on board, and is not heard of again. This traditional voyage of adventure from Greece seems also significant, and the inference in view of all the circumstances is that the British Chronicles are correct in recording that he came as Brutus or Briutus to Alban, assisted by Coronus Canius, and was the first king of the Britons in Britain. The identity of the great Homeric hero Perutus with the Brutus of the British and Irish Scot Chronicles will be more clearly seen when thus tabulated. Perutus was the son of Ixion, and Brutus in the British and Irish Scot Chronicles was the son of Ascanius or Isicon. Perutus of Homer says in Greece he was a great warrior hero. And in the Chronicles, it says he went to Greece and became a great warrior hero. Homer says that Perutus thrust the shaggy wild folk from their caves in Pelion. And the British Chronicles say that he thrust the wild aborigines from their caves in Albion. Homer says Perutus drove them to the Eight Hikis in the Pindus Mountains. The Chronicle says he drove them across the Ict Sea and to the Vindu and Pentland Hills of the Picts or Icts. Homer says Pirutus conquered Epirus and Thessaly of North Greece. The Chronicles say Brutus conquered the king of Greece. Homer says Pirutus fought against the king of Epirus with his friend Prince Theseus, the son of Aegeus, and was confined by that king on the banks of the Acheron. Brutus, in the Chronicles, fought against the king of Greece with his friend, the noble Greek prince Assaracus, and had engagement on the banks of the Acheron. Pirutus came to Epirus, marriage hunting, was married on the borders of the Epirus, and in frescoes is represented seated next to the daughters of King Pandureos. Brutus, in the Chronicles, married the daughter of the king of Epirus, Pandrasus. Pirutus was aided in his fight against the shaggy folk by Coronus Canius, and Brutus, who was aided in his fight against the wild tribes of Aquitaine and Alban by Corinius. Pirutus, his son, was joint ruler with the son of Coronus Canius. Brutus, his son, was joint ruler with the son of Corinius. Homer says that the Parthenae tribe on the frontier of Epirus were the town of Barat, and within Epirus the town of Phoenicae. And in the Chronicle it says the Baryon or Bariton title of Brutus, a ruling tribe of Barat Phoenicians. Pirutus, along with Coronus Canius, disappears from, and does not seem to have died in Greece. Whereas, of course, Brutus in the Chronicles, along with Corineus, appears in Alban, or Britain. This remarkable similarity between the traditions of the Homeric hero Pirutus, the confederate of Coronus Canius, the conqueror of aboriginal tribes who went marriage hunting to Epirus, slayed the Calydon boar, and accompanied the Phoenician Hercules on a sea voyage of adventure for the Golden Fleece, and King Brutus or Briutus the Trojan, the confederate of Corineus, who married in Epirus and sailed with a fleet of Brito-Phoenicians on a voyage of adventure past the Pillars of Hercules to the gold and tin-producing island of Albion, including Caledonia, and conquering the aboriginal tribes, colonized and civilized it, suggests that Homer had heard from Phoenician sailors of the great exploits of Brutus in Britain over 3 centuries before his day, and had woven them into the form we now find them in his immortal romance.
Tuned in to Radio Stormer on the DailyStormer.com.
The founding of London as a new Troy by King Brutus the Trojan around 1100 BC by L.A. Waddell. It is not surprising that King Brutus the Trojan should have named his new city on the Thames, in the new land of his adoption, New Troy, especially as the city on the old river Thyamis in Epirus, whence he came, was also named Troy. The naming of this new Troy in Epirus by Helenus, the fugitive son of King Priam of Troy, is described by Ovid and Virgil. The latter says, quote, "Skirting Epirus' coast, Chaonia's port, that Helenus, Priam's son o'er Greeks, bore sway, succeeding to the throne and bed of Pyrrhus, Pyrrhus dead, part of his realm to Helenus demissed, who Chaonia's plain by title knew, Troy, Chaon called, and built him walls and ramparts on the steep, whose names remind of Pergamus and Troy. In pensive thought I trace the town, the miniature of Troy, its yellow shrunken stream, its fort surnamed of Pergamus." This clearly shows that the Trojan colonists were in the habit of consciously and deliberately bestowing their treasured old Trojan names upon their new colonies, with the avowed object of reminding them of the old homeland of their Aryan ancestors. Besides this one, another new Troy is reported to have been founded by Innes in the Tiber Valley, and still another by a Trojan colony near Memphis in Egypt. And even the famous Troy of the Homeric epic appears to have been called New Troy, in distinction, presumably, to the Old Troy underlying that site. This old Trojan habit of naming some of their chief new colonial cities is analogous to that by which, in modern times, New York derived its name. The name Trinovantium could easily, as Geoffrey of Monmouth states, be a corruption of the original word for the city name which was imposed by Brutus. That original word, which Geoffrey does not supply, may be presumed to have approximated the Gothic Troiani or Troianiendi, and the Trinovantes of Caesar are called Trinoantes by Ptolemy and Tacitus. Troia, the old Greek and Gothic name for the capital city of the Trojans, could become tree in British dialect, as seen in the old English form of the word trifle, being spelt troffle, and tryst is a variant of trust. Indeed, the Gothic form of Troiani for this Trinovantium title of early London appears to be preserved in a Norse Edda, which mentions Troinoe, along with Hedenisio for Edinburgh, as furnishing a contingent fleet of long-headed ships for raiding their joint enemy, the Huns. As regards Trinovantium as a traditional name for early London, it is remarkable that no modern writer, nor even Geoffrey or Nennius, appears hitherto to have equated that name to the well-known historical title of Trinovantes for the pre-Roman British people, described by Caesar as occupying the Essex or north bank of the Thames estuary, including, obviously, the site of London City. Caesar nowhere mentions the name London for the obvious reason to be seen presently. The name London, for the British Ludden or Fort Lud of the Cymric records, is first mentioned in Roman history by Tacitus in 61 AD, who described it as the most celebrated centre of busy commerce, and he refers to it in such a way as to imply its time immemorial existence as a city. And the historian Ammianus Marcellinus of the 4th century calls London or Londinium an ancient town towards which Caesar marched, thus clearly implying that the ancient city was in existence in Caesar's day. The reason why Caesar did not mention Trinovantium City or London appears to be because he obviously did not pass through that city, and he was not in the habit of mentioning places unnecessarily in his very laconic journal. And he does not even mention the names of the place or places where he landed and re-embarked on his two expeditions, nor the name of Cassivellaunus' stronghold, although it was the most important place which he stormed, and described by Caesar as admirably fortified and the culminating place of victory in his British War, a fort which has been fairly well identified with Verulam at St. Albans. Caesar's avoidance of the capital city of the Trinovantes, or London, in his hurried, brief campaign, is apparent. It seems to me from his own narrative. He states that at his second invasion of the southeast corner of Britain, the Trinovantes were at war with Cassivellaunus, his chief enemy, and the paramount king of the Britons and leader of the confederated tribes, and whose personal territory extended northwards from the north bank of the Thames, excluding the province of the Trinovantes, which comprised the petty kingdom, now known as the eastern portion of Middlesex and Essex. Cassivellaunus, according to Caesar's information, had slain the king of the Trinovantes sometime previously, and the son of the latter, Mandubracius, had fled for protection and assistance to Caesar in Gaul, and was accompanying Caesar in his invasion, and supplying him with auxiliary troops and information, so that he is called in the Welsh Triads the betrayer of his country. When Caesar, with his veteran army of 30,000 infantry, besides cavalry, after driving back Cassivellaunus and his raw Confederate forces from Kent to the Thames, forced the passage of the Thames at its lowest, only and difficult ford, which, on good evidence, is placed at Brentford, opposite Kew, despite the desperate resistance of his enemy, who had planted sharp stakes in the river and along the bank, Cassivellaunus, despairing of success in a pitched battle with Caesar's invincible legions, significantly resorted to the same tactics as ascribed to Brutus in Epirus when attacked by the overwhelming forces of Pandrasus. He disbanded the greater part of his army, and for guerrilla war withdrew the people and their cattle into the recesses of the impenetrable woods, to which he retired himself with a small contingent. Caesar says he retained only about 4,000 charioteers, with which he harassed the detached foraging parties of the enemy, and cut off stragglers, causing Caesar to admit that Cassivellaunus engaged our cavalry to their great peril, and by the terror which he thus inspired, prevented them from moving far afield. But on this sudden disappearance of Cassivellaunus' main force at Brentford, the Trinovantes, Caesar tells us, were the first Britons to come to his camp, presumably at Brentford, and offer submission and beg protection for Mandubracius against Cassivellaunus. Caesar demanded from them 40 hostages for their good faith and corn for his army, and he notes that they promptly obeyed these commands, sending the hostages to the number required and also the grain, whereupon the Trinovantes were granted protection and immunity from all injury on the part of the legions. Thereupon, the confederated tribes, and even part of Cassivellaunus' own tribe of Cassis, followed the lead of the Trinovantes, deserted from Cassivellaunus, and submitted to Caesar, presumably won over by the latter through the agency of Mandubracius, and by Commius, another exiled Gaulish Briton prince, who also was accompanying Caesar, and utilised by him to communicate with the Britons, obviously for the notorious Roman policy of weakening their antagonists by dividing them. Having thus isolated the heroic Cassivellaunus from his confederated Briton chiefs, Caesar promptly pursued him to his stronghold at Verulam, which was almost due north of Brentford, and by a good road, in great part the old Watling Street, which by its name betrays its Gothic Briton origin, and there forced him to surrender, and he eagerly patched up a peace with him, as we learn from the contemporary letters of Cicero, stipulating that Cassivellaunus would not invade the land of the Trinovantes, and he immediately hastened back to Gaul to quell the serious insurrections there, and disheartened, as the contemporary Roman writers relate, at the final failure of his attempt to conquer Britain. In his hurried pursuit of Cassivellaunus from Brentford to Verulam, and his precipitate retreat to the port of his re-embarkation, in a campaign which lasted only a few weeks, it is clear that Caesar did not enter the capital city of the Trinovantes, Trinovantium, or London, at all, especially as he was debarred from so doing by his promise to prevent his legions from injuring or molesting in any way the Trinovantes, who had so largely contributed to the defeat of Cassivellaunus. Caesar's account of these events is generally confirmed by the indigenous account of his invasion, preserved in the British Chronicles of Geoffrey, which record the real name of Mandubracius as Andragaeus. That is also the form of his name preserved by Bede, of which Mandubracius is evidently a Roman corruption, and the real circumstances of the flight of that Duke of Trinovantium and his subordination to Cassivellaunus, the brother of that Duke's father, King Lud of Trinovantium's city, are therein fully recorded. Also, the fact that Cassivellaunus had magnanimously gifted the city of Trinovantium, or Loudon, London, to that renegade, the betrayer of his country, who had aided Caesar with his own levies. The remote prehistoric antiquity of the site of London, moreover, is evidenced by the numerous archaeological remains found there, not only of the New Stone and Early Bronze Ages, but even of the Old Stone Age, thus indicating that it was already a Pictish settlement at the epoch when Brutus selected it for the site of his new capital of New Troy. The later name of London for New Troy appears to be a corruption of the late Briton name of Loudon, or Lude's Fort, applied to it by Lude, the elder brother of Cassivellaunus, as recorded in the Chronicles, and Carlude, or Lude's Fort, is still the Welsh name for London. This later Briton name for it is seen to survive in the modern names of Ludgate Hill and Ludgate Circus, which indicate that the old city, or its citadel, centred around St Paul's, and that a chief gate appears to have been at Ludgate Circus on the banks of the old River Fleet, the modern Fleet, which in medieval times was a considerable navigable creek bordered by extensive marshes. That creek obviously derived its name from its use as the old harbour of the naval fleet of those days, the long-headed ships of Trinoe, of the Norse Edda aforementioned. That name, Fleet, is now seen to be derived from the Edic Gothic fliota, to float, flit, or be fleet, and secondarily, flotty, a ship or fleet or number of ships, and also cognate with the Greek ploson, a hull or ship. The corruption of Ludden into London appears to have been due to the later Romans, who called it Londinium. Yet it is noteworthy that the O in the modern city name is still pronounced with its old U sound. London thus appears to have been founded as the capital city of the Britophoenicians, or early Britons, many centuries before Athens and the rise of historic Greece, and 3.5 centuries before the traditional foundation of Rome.